Good morning. I'm delighted to be here and very honored to be invited to share this panel with my esteemed colleagues. And I too also want to say I was very moved by Ms. Dyson's very inspiring speech this morning. I'm going to talk about men and fathers, the missing link to improving birth outcomes. Now, as you all know, we are one of the richest nations on the face of the planet. We spend more money on healthcare for mothers and babies in the world, and yet we consistently rank near the bottom on most standard measures of maternal and child health. The United States has one of the highest rates of infant mortality amongst all developed nations. According to the CDC, in 2005, we ranked number 30 in infant mortality in the world, just slightly below Poland and slightly above Slovakia. What's more troubling to me is this persistent and disgraceful racial gap in infant mortality. You all know that a black baby born in America today is still more than twice as likely to die within the first year of life as a white baby. And it doesn't look like this racial gap is going away anytime soon. Now, an important cause of this black-white infant mortality gap is preterm birth. We all know that a black baby born today is about 1.5 times as likely to be born preterm, about 2.5 times as likely to be born very preterm. And this 2.5-fold difference in very preterm birth actually accounts for about 2/3 of all excess black infant deaths in this country. So what causes preterm birth? Well, there are multiple pathways, but one of the most important pathways is stress. Now, we've known since biblical times that stress can precipitate preterm labor, but we're now beginning to map out the biological pathways linking stress to preterm birth that involve some very powerful stress hormones. Now, I'm not going to go over all of these various mechanisms, but just know that there's this growing body of scientific evidence that's beginning to link stress to preterm birth. So the question is, what do men and fathers have to do with infant mortality? What do men and fathers have to do with birth outcomes? And one of the most important things is about stress. Now, we know that single motherhood is stressful, and that today, over 70% of black babies are born to single moms in this nation. We know that unemployment is stressful, and according to PRAMS, we know that black fathers are more likely to lose his job during pregnancy than white fathers. We know that incarceration is stressful, and again, black fathers are more likely to go to jail during pregnancy than Hispanic or white fathers. Now, does this mean that black fathers aren't around? It doesn't. We know that according to the Fragile Family Studies, that about half of the fathers in this study were actually involved in these fragile relationships, where the mom and dad are married, but they're involved in some kind of either cohabiting or visiting relationship. According to the study, when you talk to these dads, most of these dads show up on labor and delivery. And when you talk to these dads, the vast majority of them, over 98% of them, say that they want to be involved in raising their children. But unfortunately, that father involvement declines over time. And in fact, often within the first 1 or 2 years after the child's born, so that today we have that, about half of all poor black children in this country grow up in families with little or no father involvement. And we know that kids who grow up with father involvement have better school performance, higher academic achievements, fewer behavioral problems, And conversely, kids who grow up in father absent families are about 5 times more likely to live in poverty and commit crimes, about 9 times more likely to drop out of school, and about 20 times more likely to end up in prison. So what do men and fathers have to do with this? To sum up, I think everything. Sister Belia Avery says that black babies are dying because their mothers are dying in their relationships. Black babies are dying because their mothers are dying in their relationships. So unless we start paying some attention to reviving these debt relationships and repairing these broken relationships, I don't think any amount of technological advance, I don't think any amount of access to prenatal care is going to solve our nation's infant mortality problem. So how can we do better? Well, let's look at some of the barriers first from an ecological perspective, looking at factors at the individual, interpersonal, institutional, community, and society and policy level. Certainly know that there are gaps in knowledge, attitude, behavior, but also gaps in human capital at the individual level. At the interpersonal level, there are certainly things that we can do better in terms of improving gender relations, okay, with the mother, with the grandmother, with the mother's new partner. At the institutional community level, you know, I think two of the main barriers to father involvement are unemployment and incarceration. Today, in most cities across the United States, there are actually more poor black young men that are behind bars than holding jobs, and those are real barriers to real father involvement. There are stereotypes, and certainly there are racism, including institutionalized racism, that's robbing our young men around the country of their real potentials. And then our public policy have set up these barriers to real father involvement. We still have both welfare policy, our tax policy, in terms of TANF, in terms of earned income tax credit, that penalize two-parent families. And then when you talk about child support, I used to run this men's group in South Central Los Angeles, and when we started talking about child support, you can just feel the anger in the room, okay? And it's not because that these men don't care and not because that they don't want to pay child support, but it's that the child support continue to pile up when they're unemployed, when they're incarcerated, to the point it's very hard for them to pay back. And even when they try to pay it back, does that money go to the child? It doesn't. Most of it actually goes to the state to pay for mom's welfare costs. And so what our public policy basically has done is to create this whole underground cadre of men who want to be involved in their children's lives but can't. So we can certainly do a lot better from an ecological approach. I think we need more and better educational programs, employment-related services, legal and social services. At the interpersonal level, we need access to more marriage counseling and family therapy, but also teach these men about communication skills, conflict resolution skills, emotional intelligence. At the institutional and community level, certainly a full employment economy, a fair and more just criminal justice system would certainly play a big role in terms of promoting father involvement. Now, I think that the faith-based community, the community-based organizations can certainly step up and help change norms, expectations, values, as well as stereotypes. And certainly in doing racism, including institutionalized racism, is probably one of the best solutions to improving father involvement in this country. And there are a lot of policy reforms that we can also undertake. I think we also need to look at this problem from a life course perspective. Okay? How do boys become men, and how do men become fathers? And to quote Margaret Mead, the primary task of every civilization is to teach young men how to be fathers. And we're doing a pretty poor job today in our society. So to close up, I'm just going to talk about the recommendations for improving father involvement from the Commission on Paternal Involvement in Pregnancy Outcomes, CPIP. Let me just acknowledge the membership of that committee. As you can look down the list, you can see that we come from all parts of the country. We come from all different walks of life. But e pluribus unum, out of many, one, we came together, we were united by a common purpose for a common cause, to figure out how to improve father involvement in pregnancy and childbearing in this country. So in all, we came up with 40 recommendations, and let me just highlight some of the key recommendations from our commission. Okay. So in terms of research, I think we need to figure out how to kind of do more and better research on both the determinants of paternal involvement as well as its impact on pregnancy outcomes and beyond. So we recommend that the National Institute of Health and other relevant agencies should expand current efforts in and support for research on paternal involvement in pregnancy outcomes, especially in communities with marked disparities in health and healthcare. We need to do better research on paternal involvement in pregnancy outcomes in terms of theories and definitions, recruitment, retention, figure out how to recruit and retain men of color in research, measurements and methodologies, contextual factors, longitudinal pathways, physiological behavioral mechanisms, as well as doing research from the father's perspective, listen to the father's voice. Funding should be made available to develop a network of transdisciplinary research centers of excellence in paternal involvement in pregnancy outcomes. And we need to identify effective clinical and population-based strategies for enhancing paternal involvement in pregnancy outcomes. In terms of practice, we need to identify and disseminate best practices both before, during, and beyond pregnancy. So we recommend that the CDC, Title V, Title X programs, and other relevant agencies should convene an expert panel to develop clinical and population-based strategies for improving reproductive life planning, reproductive health education, and access to contraception services for young boys and men. And we also need to develop a clinical care model and population-based strategies for improving preconception health and healthcare for men. Okay. Now, this is important on several levels. So for one thing, we know that men contribute about half of the baby's genetic materials, which are carried in their sperm DNA. And we know that the sperm DNA can get damaged in a lot of different ways. And there's now this growing list of things that can potentially cause sperm DNA damage, which then can go on to kind of lead to infertility and subfertility, miscarriage, birth defects, and we now have some data linking sperm DNA damage to increased risk for childhood cancers such as leukemia. And now the good news about men is that they actually continue to make new sperm. So the average lifespan of sperm is somewhere between 42 to 76 days, which means that if you could just get men to behave or to take better care of themselves for about 3 months, you can actually replace a lot of the damaged goods with healthy sperm. And so I think that preconception care, even that one visit 3 months preconceptionally, can actually do a lot in terms of improving birth outcomes in this country. And again, this is not just about the sperm, okay? It's also about men's health. It's also about teaching men how to support and how to nurture to prepare them for pregnancy and parenting. Okay. And here are some of the key components of preconception care for men that my colleagues and I wrote in this first paper on a clinical model of preconception care for men. Now, certainly there are a great deal of barriers to preconception care for men. There's a lack of public awareness of the importance of that. It's certainly not reimbursed presently. And there's a lack of provider training. Okay, men are kind of caught in this no man's land, so that their internists, their family physicians don't know how to do it, and certainly obstetricians don't really know how to provide preconception care for men. So there's a lot of work that we have to do in order to improve preconception care for men. We need to develop and promote best practice models for involving paternal involvement in pregnancy and childbirth. Okay. We need to promote more father-friendly hospital settings, practice, and policies. Right? You all hear about baby-friendly practices, but how about father-friendly settings, practices, and policies? And we need to do better in terms of developing educational materials to help sustain paternal involvement after the newborn has been discharged from the hospital, including support for breastfeeding. And men can play a huge role in terms of supporting for breastfeeding, and we're doing a pretty bad job in terms of supporting men to do that presently. Now, some of our key policy recommendations involve removing disincentives and barriers, and increasing incentives and supports. We need to amend the Family Medical Leave Act to include paid parental leave, both maternity and paternity leave. We need to reduce the marriage penalty and the earned income tax credit to allow deductions for a second earner's income, to eliminate distinction between single parent and two parent families in determining TANF eligibility. We need to increase TANF funds to support fatherhood initiatives, to mandate a Healthy Start, Early Head Start, and other public programs serving children and families, develop more father-friendly practices and programs. So these and other recommendations are actually key features in this bill that's actually before the Congress right now that deserve your support. It's the H.R. 2979, Julia Carson Responsible Fatherhood and Healthy Families Act. And in introducing this bill on Father's Day last year, Congressman Danny Davis says that with this legislation, we're sending a message this Father's Day weekend loud and clear: responsible fatherhood is one of life's greatest privileges, but it's also one of life's greatest responsibilities. Let us celebrate the privileges and practice the responsibilities, not just on Father's Day, but every day. That's why I'm here, to practice it, to celebrate it, and to help find the missing link. Thank you very much.